One of the gifts that we are getting for Maya's parents is one of those DNA tests to check out the ancestry of Maya's family. We thought it'd be kind of fun to get some information on her family line, because there's kind of a couple of interesting twists in her family background. One of her ancestors, a great-grandfather somewhere along the line, was adopted. So they don't know where he came from. They don't know his lineage or his background, his ethnicity or anything. And then there's another, at least traditionally or legendarily in their family, is some American Indian as well. So they're going to do the DNA check to see if there's evidence of, you know, American Indian, or what potentially this adopted person from the background adds to the family lineage. They think, you know, her maiden name is Collins, and they have a lot of other ancestors who have English style names or English ethnicity names. So most likely they came from the British Isles, but there may be some other things scattered in there. You never know. So anyways, we got that for them, and we're looking forward to getting the background or the, you know, the results of that DNA test. Genealogy and things like that is somewhat important for us, more just for kind of interest. We're just kind of interested in that, those kinds of things. And some families take great pains to find the genealogical background. You know, they go through their family tree and they find all that information. And that's, you know, interesting to us, I guess. To me, it's kind of interesting. It's fun to know who your grandparents and great-grandparents and all the people back up the family line. It's interesting to know those kinds of things. But for the Jewish people of the ancient world, it was very much more important than it is to us. They kept strict genealogical records, and many of the Jews could trace their lineage back for generations. In fact, here we have the generation or the genealogy of Jesus going all the way back to Adam and to God, essentially. Now, certain things have happened in the history of the Jews that many of them can no longer do that, primarily because the city of Jerusalem was destroyed, the temple was destroyed, and a lot of those genealogical records would have been kept in the temple or perhaps in the different synagogues around the nation of Israel. Well, much of that was destroyed when the Romans destroyed the nation in 70 AD. So, plus, you know, they've gone through the Holocaust in the last century. So many Jews today don't have any idea of what their genealogical record is because those things have been destroyed. But that all happened, of course, after the time of Jesus. And even though the Jews went into Babylon in Babylonian captivity for 70 years, still they kept their records. And it's quite a remarkable thing that the Jewish people, many of them, were able to keep their records. The Jews as a nation, as a group, as an ethnicity, are able still to understand who they are. You know, they're still a distinct ethnicity, even after all these years, after all these attempts to destroy them. The Jews still persist. And well, so for the ancient Jews, for the people of Jesus' time, having a genealogy was a really important thing. And most of the Jews, or at least many of the prominent Jews, could trace their genealogies far back into the ancient past. As I said, it's important to the ancient Jews because hidden within those genealogical lists are some rather surprising details. Two of the gospel writers, including Matthew and Luke, thought that the genealogical records were important enough to include them in the gospel account. So we have Jesus' genealogies given to us in Matthew and in Luke, and we'll be looking at some of those details today. These accounts are located right next to the accounts of Jesus' birth. So Jesus, his background, his genealogy is important enough for these gospel writers to include it in the same section where they're talking about Jesus' birth. They're trying to show something. They're trying to prove something about Jesus through these genealogical records. Christmas, of course, is a celebration of Jesus' birth, but that birth is a culmination of a long list of people who lived and events that happened that culminated with the birth of Jesus. And so today I want to look at some of these interesting bits of information, some of these details that are, in a certain sense, locked away in these genealogical records. These accounts should give us even greater confidence that the Bible is true, and that Jesus claim to be the Son of God is accurate and reliable. Let's look first of all then at the importance of the genealogies to the Jews. Genealogical records were far more important to the Jewish people than they are to us today. Basically, your genealogical record told you who you are and where you stood in society. Somebody said that society was organized around kinship patterns, so every family needed lists that described its ancestral pedigree. Here in the nation of America, because we're a relatively new nation, I don't suppose that many of you can trace your genealogies far back into, most of us come from a European heritage, I suppose. So, you know, how far can you trace your genealogy back to Europe, to the old country? Because of all those people immigrating here, I think a lot of those records have been lost. People in Europe, because they've been in battle and wars over the course of history, many of them can't trace their history very far back either, but it was a little bit different in the ancient world. The record that you had, your genealogy, gives you legitimacy, or in some cases might prevent someone from a certain position or a status. So many things for the ancient Jews revolved around who they were and what family they were part of. Many things in life were connected to the family that you came from. So proving your position in the family or your ancestry, proving that was a very important thing. Somebody put it this way. In Jesus' culture, genealogy served the crucial function of determining membership in a given kinship group. Genealogy served as indicators of inherited status. In them resides remarkable social power. So I think most people, especially people of prominence or people who made a claim to some position, knew their genealogy and they could prove that they came through a certain line of people. There were four major reasons that the Jews kept accurate and complete genealogies. The first of all, ancestry determined one's claim on the land. Now, of course, you remember that the Jews left Egypt. They were in the wilderness for 40 years, but then they came into Canaan. And shortly after the conquest of Canaan, God separated up or divided up the land to the certain tribes. Certain tribes were supposed to inhabit certain territory, and they weren't supposed to sell that territory. That was theirs. Their allotment was associated with the land. And so the Jews were supposed to know where they were supposed to live and who owned the land. So it was important to have that pedigree or to have that ancestral lineage so people could tell who was supposed to own what plot of land. Second, ancestry determined claims to the right of inheritance. So when so-and-so, your father, died, who inherited, who was given the material? Property, servants, an estate, crops, other material possessions. The validity of such claims was determined by the genealogies of those involved. And so the records then could either validate or invalidate somebody's claim to an inheritance, to property, to money, to material goods. Third, your lineage established the basis of taxation. Now we find that being very important in the story of Mary and Joseph, because why did they go to Bethlehem? Well, they went there to be taxed or to be enrolled in the tax or the census that occurred. And so the reason that they went to Bethlehem was because they were both from the lineage of King David. So taxation or enrollment, the census, certain government things, you know, had to do with where you stood in your ancestral line. And then last and most importantly, ancestry verified a claim to the priesthood or royalty. Back in Ezra chapter 2, we find a number of men had been excluded from the priesthood. Remember, they came back from Babylonian captivity. They reestablished the worship of God and the temple. But there were certain people who claimed that they had the priesthood from years before. Of course, during the Babylonian captivity, the priesthood didn't operate, at least not as it should have been, because there's no temple. So when they reestablished the temple, they had to reestablish the priesthood. And there were certain individuals who said that we came from the priestly line, but they couldn't validate that because they had no genealogical records. So at that time, the leaders said, well, you can't serve, you can't function as a priest until we can find legitimation or legitimacy or some record showing that you truly were from the priestly line. So those genealogical records could either validate or invalidate your status, your ability to serve as the priest, or most importantly, your ability to serve as the king. The king, of course, had to be from the line of David. That was very clearly established from the time of David, that all the kings had to be in the Davidic dynasty or somehow connected to it. So they had to prove that they were part of that line. The Messiah, even, would have had to prove his direct lineage from the great King David. Therefore, the Jews living in Israel, for them, ancestral records were really critical. And that's why they kept these records. And as I said, they typically would store these either in the temple itself or in the synagogues. Today, I'm not sure that, I suppose there are organizations that you can go to try to find information on your family. And that's a great resource today. You don't even have to leave home to get access to incredible records and libraries and things to establish your ancestry. But back at that time in the ancient world, you know, you had to go to the source. Wherever that record was kept, you had to go there if you wanted to see your ancestral line. And I imagine that most families had kind of a good idea of where they fit in the history of Israel and what their genealogical record was. They maybe didn't know all the details, but they certainly knew where it was kept. Because it was somewhat of a source of pride, especially if you were in a particular family, you know, that was a big deal to you, and you could go and check with the records to see where you were in there. The gospel writers had access to the public records for Mary and Joseph. Jesus' genealogy makes a crucial contribution to his credentials as the Messiah. If he is to be verified as the king, he must have a Davidic lineage. That's what the Bible says repeatedly, that it's through the throne of David, or through the king, or through the family of David, that the Messiah would come. So if he is to be verified as the king, he has to have this Davidic lineage. And, of course, his genealogy shows that he is in the Davidic line. So we may not appreciate the genealogies very much. I don't know if you're reading through the gospel records. Do you take time to read all the names of the different people who show up in the genealogies? Typically, we sort of skim through that part because it's not particularly relevant to us. There's not a whole lot of meaning to us. Now, if we were in that family, we might look at that differently. But, you know, for us in our day and age, we typically skim over or even skip that material. But really, there's a lot of important details there. Let's go on and look then at the two genealogies of Jesus. The New Testament contains two lists that outline Jesus' genealogy. One is found in Matthew, one is found in Luke. Anyone who reads these lists will notice a difference between them. Matthew segregates or segments up the generations from Abraham to David, and then from David to the Babylonian captivity, and then the Babylonian captivity to the time of Jesus. He says there's 14 generations in these different segments. So Matthew, you know, he puts it together in kind of a organized or an arranged way of doing things, where if you look at Luke's record, it's just a list of about 78 different people, and it just goes from one to the next to the next. Matthew starts with Abraham and goes forward to Jesus, forward in time. So he wants to show very clearly that Jesus is in the line of Abraham and David to show that he's, you know, a legitimate Jew. It seems as if Matthew is writing to a particular audience, to Jewish people in particular, trying to show them that Jesus has a legitimate claim to be the Messiah. So he's got that in his mind as he writes this. He wants to show that Jesus is a legitimate Jew, a son of Abraham, and legitimately going back to the throne of David. Luke, on the other hand, starts with Jesus and extends backward, not only all the way to Abraham, but all the way to God. So Luke has, I think, a little bit more broad purpose in putting down the information that he gives us. He's not only showing Jesus' connection all the way back to Abraham, but all the way back to God in the first humans that God created. So he wants to display Jesus' connection all the way back to God himself. Matthew traces Jesus' line back to King David through Solomon. Remember that David's son, Solomon, was the ruler after David. But Luke traces Jesus' lineage not from Solomon, but from one of David's other sons named Nathan. Now, the Bible doesn't really mention a whole lot about Nathan, other, I think, than mentioning his name, that he was one of Bathsheba's sons, I think the third son of Bathsheba. So Luke's genealogy, his record goes back to one son of David, and Matthew's genealogy goes back to a different son of David. Another unique feature in Matthew's account is the presence of four women. Typically speaking, the Jews did not include women in their genealogies, but here, four women are found in Matthew's account: Tamar, Rahab, Ruth, and Bathsheba. And what's kind of interesting about each one of these women is that there are some scandalous aspect of each one of these women's lives. And that sort of goes along with the fact that Mary is pregnant without being married. So there's some questionableness or some scandal, you might say, in all these women who show up in Jesus' genealogy. Matthew traces Jesus through his grandfather, Jacob, while Luke traces Jesus through his grandfather, Heli. Now let's look at Luke chapter 3, if you're still there. Luke chapter 3, verse 23, kind of an interesting thing here. Luke chapter 3, verse 23, Jesus himself began to be about 30 years of age, being, now notice those words, as was supposed. People thought of him as the son of Joseph, which of course he really wasn't. Joseph, the son of Heli. Also notice, if you have the King James, the son of is in italics. So that's added by the translator. It literally says Joseph, which was of Heli. Sometimes when we have these genealogies, it doesn't necessarily mean that the person who's of the next person is the direct son. Sometimes they include grandsons in that from one to the other. Sometimes they actually include sons-in-law. So this is what I think it is talking about. Joseph, the son of Heli, does not necessarily mean that Joseph was the son of Heli. He could be related in some other way. The word son for the Jews could indicate a variety of relationships, including son-in-law. So in some genealogical lists, the husband would be counted as the son of the wife's father. So in other words, you are counted as son, even though you're really the son-in-law. It appears that Joseph is the son of Jacob and the son-in-law of Heli. In other words, Heli is Mary's father. Typically speaking, like I said, they did not include women in these genealogical lists. Sometimes they do, but it's kind of rare. So here when it says that Joseph, which is the son of Heli, if my understanding is correct, he's probably talking about Heli as his father-in-law. Heli is actually the father of Mary. So why do we find these differences in the lists? That goes on to try to explain why we have to come to that conclusion. There's a good bit of scholarly debate about this, and various scholars have produced different theories. In fact, I was reading one writer who tries to say, or who says, that both of these records are true of Joseph, even though there's a lot of differences between the time of Joseph going back to David. There's a lot of differences between the two lists. One scholar that I read said that these are still the accounts or the genealogies of Joseph. He doesn't try to reconcile the two accounts. He just states it without reconciling it. My understanding, however, is that Matthew is tracing Jesus' line through Joseph, his earthly legal father. That's Matthew doing that. And then Luke is tracing the line back through Mary's side of the family. So Matthew's line is paternal, you might say, through the father. Luke's line is maternal through the mother. That, I think, is a better understanding than to say that these two ancestral lists are both true of Joseph when there's so much difference between them. If we understand the one to be from Mary's side, that's what we find in Luke, and the other to be from Joseph's side, that's what we find in Matthew, that to me makes a lot of sense and reduces any problems. Well, what are the values of these lists then? Both of the lists verify that Jesus has the legal right to the throne of David. And of course, that's really what the genealogies do, is prove something about Jesus. They're trying to verify that he has the right to claim to be the Messiah. He goes back to King David, and that was necessary for the Messiah. Normally speaking, the legal right to occupy the throne would come down to the father's line. And of course, Joseph was not the natural father of Jesus. He was the adoptive father. But Joseph was still the legal father of Jesus, and that gave Jesus the legal right. We'll discuss that in a moment, but the legal right to sit on the throne came to Jesus through Joseph. And the fact that Mary is also in David's line gives further legitimacy to Jesus' claim to be the son of David, or have the right to sit on his throne. Jesus has connections to David through both his mother and his father, through different branches of that family line, but they both go back to David, King David. Somebody described it in this way. Two genealogies are absolutely necessary to trace the lineage of Jesus, the royal and the legal, the natural and the literal. We find the legal and royal genealogy in Matthew's gospel, the natural and literal in Luke's. His scriptural credentials are thorough, clear, and irrefutable. And so this is another way to grant credibility or accuracy to Jesus' claim to be the Messiah. He had to come through this lineage. So that fact would be very important to the Jews. In order for a Jewish person to believe that Jesus is the Messiah, he had to be persuaded that he stood in King David's line. And of course, that's exactly what the genealogies show. Let's look at a couple more highlights here from the genealogy. Again, going back to Luke 3:23, as was supposed, the son of Joseph. So this, I think, indicates or buttresses or shows the truth of the idea of the virgin birth of Christ. People supposed that Joseph was Jesus' father, but in reality, of course, he was not. People supposed an awful lot of things about Jesus that were not true. And so this shows that although people assumed that he was the son of Joseph, he really was not. Also interesting in Luke's list is that there are many names that are unknown to us. If you go back and look through the list that Luke includes, you'll find numbers of people between the time of David and the time of Jesus who are just unknown. That's because this is not the royal line. The royal line would have gone through Solomon, which Matthew gives us, but this is not the royal line. And so many of these people are not otherwise mentioned in the Bible. We don't know anything about them other than they show up here in the list of Mary's ancestors. So this is the source of this must have been Mary's family. Now, where did Luke get a hold of this list? Well, we don't know exactly. He doesn't say where he got this. He does say at the beginning of his book that he researched all this information. So where would a person's family genealogical list be found? Well, probably Luke had to go either to the synagogue where Mary's family worshipped or perhaps to the temple. So these were, you might say, public documents, or in some cases, family documents. But you can almost imagine Luke going back to these records to try to show what he's trying to show in his book, that Jesus is the Messiah. He's the Christ, the Son of God. And this genealogical record will give evidence, give credibility or validity to that claim. So Luke must have either asked Mary for this or somehow got a hold of the family records, but he included it here to show something very important about Jesus. The genealogy provides certain important credentials for Jesus. First of all, that he was the son of Abraham. Of course, any Messiah, anybody claiming to be the Messiah, had to be Jewish, had to be Jewish through and through. And so this goes back right to Abraham. You may remember Galatians 3:16, which says, "Now to Abraham and his seed were the promises made." It does not say, "and to seeds as of many, but as of one, to your seed," singular, "who is Christ." So the Christ has to follow his genealogy back to Abraham in order for the promise to ring true. Jesus is that promised seed who will bring about the Abrahamic blessings. He was a Jew, a descendant of Abraham. He was also the son of David, as we've talked about. The Messiah will be from David's family. The Messiah will be a Davidic king who will usher in all the promises that we find in the Old Testament, the messianic promises. Isaiah 9:7 says, "Of the increase of his government and peace, there shall be no end upon the throne of David and upon his kingdom." So obviously the Messiah had to be connected to the Davidic kingdom. Somebody said that God promised David a perpetual throne, dynasty, and kingdom. This complex of promises would be fulfilled only when a descendant of David permanently established David's dynasty by forever occupying the throne of the kingdom of Israel. And of course, that's what the Jews were expecting for their Messiah, to come and establish a kingdom. Because the Jews rejected him, the kingdom has been postponed. We believe that when Jesus comes again the second time, he will establish this millennial perfect kingdom that the Old Testament tells us so much about. So the genealogy shows us that Jesus descended from David through Solomon on his father's side and through Nathan on his mother's side. It also shows that he was a son of Adam. Remember, Luke's genealogy goes all the way back to Adam. Now, what's so important about being a son of Adam? Well, that's humanity. Adam was the first human. And so to show that Jesus is directly connected to Adam shows that he's not an angel, he's not some sort of a superhuman person. He is, in his humanity, 100% human. In fact, the author of Hebrews tells us that he had to be made like unto his brethren, that he might be a merciful and faithful high priest. In order for Jesus to fulfill his duties as the propitiation for our sins and to be the high priest, he had to be human. So he had to be in Adam's line. He had to be a son of Adam. And then finally, he was the son of God. Luke traces his lineage all the way back to Adam, and then he says Adam was the son of God. Now, Adam was the son of God in a physical sense, in the sense that God created Adam. Jesus is the son of God in a different sense. Obviously, Jesus is not a created being. the Son of God, or his position as the Son of God, is eternal. Jesus didn't become the Son of God at his incarnation or his birth. Jesus has been the divine Word, the second person of the Trinity, and that is an eternal relationship. He is the Son of God by nature, you might say. So, as God said in Luke chapter 3 to Jesus, he said, "You are my beloved Son, in you I am well pleased." So Jesus' genealogy is important in that it proves his credentials. He has the right to claim to be the Messiah. If he were not in Abraham's family, if he were not from the tribe of or the line of David, if he were not fully human, then he couldn't make the claim to be the Son of God. But his genealogy proves that he has the right to make these claims. And then one final detail that's really often overlooked or sometimes not even known really revolves around a notorious king named Jeconiah. He's also called Jehoiachin, and he's also called Kaniah. So it's a little bit confusing because there are about three names for the same individual. Way back in Jeremiah chapter 22, we find the Lord cursing this king named Jeconiah or Kaniah. He was the last king of Judah before the Babylonian exile. He was so wicked and ungodly that the prophet Jeremiah cursed him or pronounced this curse on him from the Lord, saying that any child born of him would not sit on the throne of David. He would be prohibited from sitting on the throne of David. And Kaniah's descendants were in the Davidic line, but they were barred from David's throne. So everybody in the Davidic line from Jeconiah's line, although they were in the Davidic line, it was the royal line, nobody from that family could sit on the throne of David, could be the king. Well, guess who is a descendant of Kaniah? It is Joseph, the husband of Mary. He descends from him. You can find that in Matthew chapter 1, verses 11 and 12. Joseph is in the royal line, but he could not occupy the throne because of the curse of Kaniah. You might say that he had the legal right of David's throne, but that right was suspended because of this curse on this wicked king. As I mentioned earlier, Luke's genealogy traces Mary's line back to David's son Nathan, not through Solomon, and so Mary's line avoids the curse of Kaniah. Somebody described it in this way: Jesus acquired the right to the throne of David through Joseph and is eligible to sit on it as David's son through Mary. So this requires an amazing miracle to allow Jesus to sit on the throne, and the only way they avoided the curse of Kaniah is the virgin birth. If Joseph were the true, literal, physical father of Jesus, then he could not sit on the throne because nobody from that family has the right to sit on the throne of David. They were prohibited, that whole line following Jeconiah, and Joseph is in that line. So the only way that Jesus can avoid the curse of Kaniah is the virgin birth. Joseph was not his physical or his literal father. Somebody said that Joseph stood legally in Solomon's dynasty and inherited the right to the throne and the kingdom, and he was not barred from these privileges by the curse of Kaniah. Jesus received both the legal and the biological right to the throne of Israel, but because of the virgin birth, he does not fall under the disqualification of Kaniah's curse. Only the virgin birth allows Jesus to inherit from Joseph the legal right to rule and from Mary the biological qualifications to rule. So it's an interesting coming together of the two lines of David's family, Mary as Jesus' actual physical mother and Joseph as the adopted father. But if Joseph were not the adopted father, Jesus could not be the Messiah. So that's an interesting kind of a detail from the genealogy that most people are not aware of. But if that detail were any different, that would remove Jesus out of qualification for being the Messiah. If we're not familiar with the lineage of Jesus, we would not be aware of these amazing truths. So we should pay attention to these genealogies because there are some amazing truths hidden in them. Well, in a certain sense, we celebrate Christmas because of Jesus' genealogical record. The main characters in the record, and even the obscure ones, are important. We find small details that entitle Jesus to be the Savior of the world. These details are contained within the genealogical record. It's another evidence of God's providential hand working in history. Genealogical lists are not normally the popular, inspiring parts of the Bible. Most people either skim over them or skip them altogether. But when we stop to consider the information in these lists, we find some really important and amazing details and facts. At Christmas time, we celebrate Jesus' birth, and rightly so. We should recognize that Jesus' birth was the culmination of a long line of people and a long set of events that had to unfold in a certain way. In part, it's these genealogical lists that give us confidence that Jesus is whom he claimed to be. Not only the son of Mary and the adopted son of Joseph, but the son of David and the son of Abraham, and most significantly, the eternal Son of God. Well, let's close in prayer.